He sensed his son's equal relief at hearing that.
All right. I'll have everything Laurel found out for you tomorrow night.
We should probably say goodnight then, in case the master wakes, he said reluctantly.
Goodnight, father. I hope the king and the heraldic circle have some good ideas for us.
Mags let go of his son's mind and stared into the darkness in the cave, just listening to Dalin and Roya breathe. But all he could think was,
so do I, son. So do I.
16. To Perry's surprise, Laurel returned on his own, nosing the door to the kennel open and lapping up a prodigious amount of water before flopping down next to him.
How did you get back in the compound?
Perry asked him.
I scratched at the gate like a house dog, and the guards let me in. They gave me the leftovers from their dinner, too.
Faint memories of the delicious taste of suckling pig permeated the thought.
I found a couple of good places for your father to get over the palisade, and I started on a hole under it. There's a spot where no one has ever been but me. It was full of dust and dead leaves, so no one has ever patrolled there on the inside.
Perry knew the outside didn't matter. It wasn't as if there were guards stationed outside the palisade within sight of each other all night. To post sentries like that would have required most of the company.
What about the compound?
No one patrols the outside of the compound. The only guards are stationed at the gate. He just needs to avoid being seen by people inside, and once everyone's asleep, either of the back corners would do for that.
But how—
Do I get out? The guards let me out here. I can either wait until the gate is open in the palisade and make a dash for the forest, or I can dig my way out under the palisade. The palisade isn't nearly as old as the city. I'm willing to bet that those logs are only sunk as deep as they have to be in order to support their own weight upright long enough for them to be pegged together. 3, perhaps 4 arm lengths. As I said, I started on a hole already. It will take me 2, perhaps 3 days to finish the digging job.
Laurel paused to think.
I should start a food cache out there.
Better yet, when father comes over the wall, I'll have him leave a food cache for you.
Excellent plan. Laurel approved. Now let's sleep. It has been a very long day.
It turned out to be a short night. The sky was still dark, and there were still a few bright stars in it when a commotion in the courtyard woke Perry and Laurel. It immediately roused all the dogs and started them barking in alarm before he quieted them down.
Something was certainly going on, but what? With the dogs raising an alarm, it would look strange if I didn't stick my head out.
He got up and cautiously cracked the kennel door open. When nothing happened, he opened it fully and had a look around. The captain, looking short of sleep and temper both, was mustering a group of heavily armed, equally sleepy men in the area between the kennel and the big house. It was very clear from his manner and that of the men he must have booted out of a sound sleep that they were all both unhappy and afraid.
And I want you to search every inch of forest between the city and the full league out, he shouted.
But Captain,
ventured one of the men carefully.
What are we looking for?
Damned if I know, the captain growled. The master says something's out there, but he don't say who or what. Just look for anything out of the ordinary.
A couple of men looked askance at each other at that, but what could they do? The master had given orders, however vague those orders were, and it was their job to figure out how to follow those orders or face the consequences.
Dismissed! The captain shouted. Now get out there and find whatever it is!
The men turned at a single barked order from their officer and headed for the gate at a trot. Perry ventured out and wandered toward the captain on a path that would intersect his. When it did, the captain looked up and stared at him blankly for a moment, as if he didn't recognize the boy in front of him.
Hunt?
Said Perry. That seemed to shake him out of his stupor. He smiled wanly.
No, Dogboy. No hunting today. If we are sent for your dogs to follow, it would be different. But at the moment, we're chasing shadows.
The last was said very bitterly. Perry shook his head.
No hunt shadows, he objected.
I know you can't.
The captain patted his head roughly.
It's all right. If we find something, we'll have a use for you and the dogs.
Perry blinked at him, as if he only understood one word in 10.
Food?
He suggested finally.
Good idea. Come along.
With Perry trotting at his side, the captain headed for the improvised kitchen. There they found a cook just taking some loaves of bread out of the oven. The kitchen was comfortably warm and smelled delightfully of bread and roasted pork. One of the helpers handed a loaf to the captain, who broke it in two, inhaling the fragrance with appreciation as it steamed into the cool morning air, and handed half to Perry. He mimed to Perry that he should pick the soft, hot bread out of the middle and eat it to make a sort of bowl. Perry did that, and the helper took the two hollowed-out loaves from them and filled the hollow with cooked pork trimmings, bits of crisped skin and fat, and finished it with a half ladle of broth. They stood there eating while the cook finished what he was doing, then turned to the captain.
What in the dark hell was that all about?
The cook asked in a low voice, as though he was afraid to be overheard.
Master sent one of his half-wits to drag me out of bed before dawn,
the captain replied.
I got to listen to a candle mark or more of hysterical ranting that something was in the forest, and I was ordered to find it.
Something? How the hell are you?
The cook shook his head.
Never mind.
Just tell me if I'm likely to find myself faced with having to cook.
He shuddered.
I'm telling you, Captain. I don't know if I can face that again.
The captain shuddered too.
I don't think so. He's got his own half-wit to do that sort of cooking now. And there's a better kitchen in his palace than what you got here. What I don't know is what'll happen if he decides to make a lesson out of someone because we couldn't find whatever ghost he's chasing.
The captain invoked the names of several gods that Perry didn't recognize.
The man can't take much more of that. Someone's gonna snap, and I don't know how that'll play out.
Perry decided to take pity on them, because he'd had an idea. He tugged on the captain's sleeve, and before the other could reprimand him, said loudly,
Ghost!
Then he flapped his free hand vaguely in the direction of the forest.
Ghost! Tree ghost!
He thumped his chest.
Dog boy know! Dog boy see!
The captain stared at him a moment, as emotions passed over his face. First surprise, then anger. Then the anger faded and speculation took its place.
What's the daft lad talking about, Captain?
The cook wanted to know. The captain shook his head.
Not sure, but he did come out of the forest. Maybe he saw something there. Tree ghosts?
He asked, turning Perry to face him.
What are tree ghosts?
Ghosts in trees.
He made a whooshing noise with his mouth and moved his free hand through the air as if it were flying through the branches.
Up in trees, dog boy see.
When?
The captain persisted. Perry scratched his head, as if the concept of when were a hard one for him.
Before here,
he said finally.
Sons and sons.
The cook and the captain exchanged a look.
Do you think? Said the cook. I think that if my men find nothing, I'm gonna claim the forest is haunted and the master himself woke up the ghosts,
the captain said firmly.
I'm tired of losing men because the master gets a burr up his arse.
The cook looked a little green.
It'll be worse if it ain't cause it got a burr up his ass, if it's cause he's pining for his favorite meal, and he's making up an excuse to get it.
Well, now I know where that meat I was offered came from.
It seemed that the cook and the captain were very old friends and were willing to confide things to each other they'd never let out in front of the men. Perry feigned to have lost interest in the conversation now that he'd imparted his little bit of information. He ate bits of broth-soaked bread and crisp pork, and looked at nothing but his improvised bowl. But the captain and the cook were filling in a lot of blank places in his understanding of this place and situation. It wasn't direct information, just a bit here and a bit there, but Perry was able to put all the bits together into a coherent whole that made sense. The master, it seemed, had a habit of making examples out of men who, judged by some standard neither the cook nor the captain understood, exhibited treacherous and suspicious behavior. They would be brought to the big house and left there with the master. Sometimes they came back days later, and if they did, they had terrible half-healed head wounds and had only enough mind left to do the simplest of tasks. Mostly they didn't come back. Perry surmised that the former dog master had been one of those who had come back.
Maybe he looked too tough to eat.
Perry learned that the master always took the men two at a time, and they were always good friends, and he almost stopped eating as he realized exactly what must be going on. The master was surely forcing each pair of men,
men who were friends, to fight to the death, probably with some crude weapon like an axe. If one survived, he'd be a living, sickening example of why it was a bad idea to even consider rebelling, and a living example of why it was a bad idea to have friends here. And the ones that didn't survive, well, Perry already knew what became of them. As he listened and filled in his information, he realized that the captain and the cook had already figured all of this out. If they had, probably so had all the other men. This certainly explained the lack of camaraderie, the curiously impersonal gathering in the tack room. If you'd had friends before you came here, it was better for both of you if you pretended that relationship had never existed. And if you hadn't, well, it wasn't a good idea to make friends. Not when you could be forced to try to kill each other on the master's whim. Much as Perry hated to admit it, this was a stroke of genius. You couldn't foment a rebellion if you didn't dare talk to each other. It didn't matter to the master if the men were able to work together. He could control them all with his mind if he needed to. It didn't matter if they were loyal to each other. All that mattered was that they feared him. That would get him absolute obedience. Brilliant. Diabolical, but brilliant. And add to it that they all knew what became of their own fallen comrades. That would evoke the sort of horror of the master nothing else could do. Terror and horror would do more, so far as the master was concerned, than loyalty and devotion. But he realized something else. He was going to have to get a message to his father, and quickly, that the master had noticed something out there in the forest, which probably meant that he had detected the Dahili, Dalin, or even Mags's mind speech. He drifted away from the kitchen. The captain didn't stop him, so evidently he had no further use for the dog boy at the moment. He and the cook were deep in a discussion of just what sort of ghosts could be out in the forest. Evidently neither of them had ever heard of the Taledras, because nothing they suggested sounded at all like a Hawk Brother. That seemed to confirm that these mercenaries had never heard of the Pelagir Hills before they arrived here. It seemed an odd omission. Everyone in Valdemar certainly knew about the uncanny reputation of the Pelagir Hills, and he was pretty sure the reputation persisted as far south as the Dorisha Plains. Maybe mercenaries just don't bother finding out about any place they don't have to be working in. They were certainly coming up with all manner of spirits that might be haunting the hills, though, first and foremost being the former inhabitants of this city. That was the last Perry heard as he drifted out of sight, and his desultory progress gave him plenty of leisure to set his own mind seeking the ravens. They were his best chance of getting a warning to his father undetected. He found the entire flock of seven still waking up and thinking of breakfast, and that gave him an idea. By the time the men arrived with the meat for the dog's meal, he was sitting on a stool by the kennel door playing with the ravens and feeding them tidbits from his own breakfast. He fed the dogs, turned them loose in their yard, set the helpers to cleaning the kennel, and returned to the ravens, now feeding them with the leftover dog's meat. Before long, he had some of the men coming to watch him curiously for a moment, but the novelty soon wore off when the ravens didn't do any tricks or anything clever. By lunchtime, he and his flock weren't attracting any attention at all. It seemed, as he had hoped, they were just chalking it all up to a daft dog boy's extraordinary power of making friends with animals. That was just what he needed. Now no one would pay any attention at all to the ravens' comings and goings. He could easily use them now to carry messages whenever he needed to. He went inside the kennel for a moment and got one of the ravens to follow, with Laurel keeping watch to make sure no one had noticed. When the raven came back out, the flock took off together, but one of them bore a message, and all of them were heading for Mags. A loud chorus of quarks called Mags out of the cave, and as soon as he emerged, a young raven dove down out of the branches of a tree and landed in front of him, holding out one leg expectantly. His heart sank when he saw the paper tied to it. With hands a lot steadier than they should have been, he freed the raven of his burden and hastily read the message.
Master senses something in forest. Sent mercs to hunt 1 league from city.
His heart stopped pounding quite so hard, and with a sigh of relief, he went back into the cave and returned with dried rabbit and fish to reward the ravens with. The cave was more than a league from the city. Even assuming this master had any notion just how far a league was,
or that the mercenaries were going to search that far. But it was possible that the master had gotten some inkling of his presence, or that of the Dahili herd, and Roya needed to be warned. So he sent out the merest thread of a thought to Roya and kept it to a single word.
Come.
Then he sat down to wait. He had actually waited for longer than he had expected when Roya finally ghosted his way out of the forest, appearing before him so quietly that he jumped a little, then recovered.
I got a raven message from Parry, he said. The master has sent something in the forest and is searching for whatever it is. For quite some distance out from the city, too. A full league, according to Parry.
Roya not only made the sound in his mind, it rumbled in his throat.
Thank you for summoning me at once. I did not anticipate this. I have had Daihili overwatching the city to keep an eye on these mercenaries, and I certainly do not want any of them harmed. Give me a moment.
Mags waited patiently. He had learned that patience was a requisite with Roya. The King Stag did things in his own time, on his own schedule. He watched as the Daihili's long ears twitched, and his eyes darted rapidly behind his closed eyelids. It seemed to take a very long time. Certainly the sun, dappling the ground in front of the cave entrance, had moved visibly when Roya's eyes opened again.
There. They are withdrawing at a run. And they did indeed witness a group of men emerge from the city and begin what looked like a search. They assumed it was a hunt for one of the master's own men who had tried to flee.
Do you think there's any chance the master detected your scouts?
Mags asked anxiously.
I think it would be foolish to discount the idea. We really have no idea what he is and is not capable of.
Roya's chin worked as he chewed on what looked to be unpleasant thoughts as he chewed on his cud.
I wonder if it is wise to contact your son as usual tonight. If the master has detected any of our mind speech, he might be on the alert and searching for such a thing.
Are you certain you can tell when the master is asleep?
Mags asked. Then something else occurred to him.
Once he is, can you lull him into a deeper sleep?
Roya considered this.
Perhaps. It would make contacting your son less dangerous, and he is our only source of information at the moment.
I thought about trying to read the surface thoughts of those mercenaries, but...
Risky. Very risky. But I think it is worth the attempt to send him into a deeper sleep once he is asleep. If he starts to rouse, I am certain I can withdraw before he becomes aware I was there.
In the meantime, can you ask the ravens to keep a watch on those searchers and come warn us if they venture too close?
Define too close,
Roya retorted with a touch of humor.
I can run much faster than you.
But then he nodded.
Certainly I can. I can also assign my very best and most stealthy Daihili to trail them, and come to us at the gallop should they venture in this direction.
Roya closed his eyes again, and Mags kept his mouth shut while the King Stag was in silent communion with his own herd members and the ravens. The wretched thing was, of course, that he was essentially helpless. While he had never tried to take over the mind of anyone, much less many people at once, the fact that the master could do that almost certainly meant that he was an exponentially more powerful mind speaker than Mags. It was entirely possible that he had sensed Mags's mind speech with Roya, even at so great a distance. Or worse, he had sensed Mags's mind speech with Arvel. That shouldn't be possible, not with companions protecting them, but if it was true,
somehow we'll have to neutralize him. He's too dangerous to be allowed so near to Valdemar.
By noon there had been no further raven messages from Parry, and the mercenaries had retreated back into the city without venturing anywhere near Mags's cave and the area around it where the bulk of Roya's herd was. With the aid of a great deal of practice in acting as if everything were normal when it was, in fact, anything but, Mags checked his trap lines and weirs, collected rabbits and fish, managed to shoot a couple of unwary young cock pheasants, and brought his catch back to the cave, where he selected what he was going to cook and eat immediately, and prepared the rest for smoking and drying. He devoted a corner of the cave to a smoking fire, and had racks made of green branches tented over his smoke source, with leafy boughs over that, holding the smoke in. He knew that he had to proceed as if he and Parry were going to need provisions. They could be left behind for the ravens if such things were never needed, but it would be a disaster if they needed food and didn't have it. It gave his hands something to do, while his mind worried uselessly on the problem of how to get Perry out and how to deal with the master. As soon as he thought Arvel might be in a position to talk to him, he called his companion and the king's stag into the cave, sat himself down in a corner, braced against the wall, and had Dalin boost him and Roya guard him while he sent his mind streaming out to his fellow herald. Arvel, it appeared, was more than ready for him.
"Mags!" he exclaimed. "I've been mind-speaking all morning. The king wants more information."
Mags willingly told him everything he already knew, and the more he passed on, the deeper Arvel's concern became.
"This is horrible," he exclaimed. "We can't possibly send a guard."
"Obviously," Mags sighed. "But that's not up to us. That's up to the king and the council. The worst part of it is, there is no way to find out exactly what else this master can do. Listen, I want to know if there are any heralds or healers who know how to block or burn out gifts. If we can do that, once his abilities are negated, we can just leave him alone. As soon as his mercenaries discover he's powerless to hurt them, well, it won't be pleasant for him, but that won't be our concern."
"I'll pass all this on. Contact me again in 2 candle marks.
Arvel broke the connection, and Mags could sense as he did how tired he was. This was probably more mind-speaking than he'd done in a year or more, and all of it had been within a few days. For those who weren't strong mind-speakers, it was exhausting.
Poor old man.
Here he thought he had gone to spend his last years in a safe and comfortable place, a place where he could be useful, but where he could, fundamentally, rest. Now he was in the middle of a situation almost as dire as anything Harold Mage Vanyell had faced, and Arvel was very well aware that he was no Vanyell.
"Well, neither am I if it comes to that."
"As far as I can tell, the master was not aware of your conversation," Roya said soberly. "I am taking great care that he not detect me as well. He seems preoccupied with searching the city itself at the moment. I would say he was jumping at shadows, except, of course, we are not shadows."
"We certainly aren't. I wish I were a herald mage rather than what I am," he sighed. "If I were, I could give him plenty of..."
And then it suddenly occurred to him.
"You have an idea."
"Maybe. I'm outside the borders of Valdemar, so it might not work. Have you ever heard of Vrondi?"
"The Watchers? I don't know a great deal about them."
"When Harold Mage Vanyell realized that the Harold Mages were being systematically assassinated, and that Valdemar was going to be helpless against true magic and the mages that could wield it, he created a spell that summoned the Vrondi within Valdemar's borders to gather and aggressively watch any mage who passed across the border."
He waited for Roya to assimilate all that. Roya pawed the ground a little.
"Just watch. Of course that is what Vrondi do, but..."
Then, all in a heartbeat, Mag saw understanding flood the king's stag.
"Oh.
Oh! By the horned moon, that would be maddening, wouldn't it?"
"Literally," he assured the Daehili. "I watched it happen. A mage from a land that is an enemy to us was part of a phony delegation when I was first at the Collegium. I saw him go slowly insane. In fact, there was more than one attempt in that time period, and they all went insane. Now, if I could somehow persuade the Vrondi that he is of interest to them..."
"It would certainly give him shadows to chase," the king's stag agreed. "But I am no mage either. How would you persuade the Vrondi to do this?"
Mags wished desperately that he had the Heartstone beneath the palace to talk to. Well, consult. It wasn't exactly alive. It was more like a sort of library of everything Harold Vanyell had known and done and left in place to keep the kingdom safe.
Bloody hell. Maybe Cedric can talk to it too. He's the king. You'd think it would talk to the king. The only question is if he'll be able to remember what it tells him long enough to tell me.
That was the rub. Vanyell had known, when he established the Vrondi spell, that if anyone inside Valdemar began to manifest the mage gift, he or she would quickly be driven insane. So he had added a component that made it difficult, if not impossible, for anyone inside the border to think about real magic, as opposed to mind magic, and, not so incidentally, that was yet another safeguard against true magicians operating inside Valdemar. The only time you could effectively think about real magic in the here and now was when you were in contact with the Heartstone.
"I think you are beginning to flail," Roya observed. "It's perfectly understandable. This is a tense situation,
but you are grasping at twigs before you even know if a twig is there.
Anger flared, but he controlled it. Roya was right, damn him. But that didn't mean he had to like it. First, we find out what the king and council have decided, said Dalin reasonably. Then we'll know what we're expected to do. If we can't do what they want, we'll report back, because there is absolutely no good going to come of trying something, failing badly, and alerting the master to the fact we know of his presence. And we'll put it that way to Haven, and wait for them to come up with a better plan. That was sensible. That was absolutely sensible. He'd been so blinded by his worry over Perry, and so certain that the king would order them to eliminate the master regardless of the cost, that it had never occurred to him that trying and failing had worse consequences than not doing anything at all. That's why we're partners chosen, Dalin reminded him. Two heads are better than one, as the saying goes.
I wonder if there is some other way we can mimic spirits haunting the forest and drive him to barricade himself inside, Roya observed. I wonder if there are Tervadi about.
Abruptly, he folded his legs under himself and settled onto the sand of the cave floor as he did when he needed to concentrate.
Let me know if you need me.
How long has it been since I contacted Arvel? He asked Dalin. Not long enough. Go fiddle with your smoked meat. Go collect greens and mushrooms. And don't worry about Perry. Right at the moment, he's safer than we are.
Right at the moment, I'm safer than Father is,
Perry thought soberly, as he watched the captain put together yet another group, this time to search building to building through the entire city. Building to building. Did you? He thought with alarm at Laurel.
I hid my hole under a big pile of dead leaves and other trash. I wiped all my paw marks clean, except the ones I wanted them to see. I want them to think I took a turn patrolling the palisade. That might make them think they can scant on their own patrols.
Ooh, clever! Perry was suitably impressed. You make a great partner!
So do you. And I have an idea. Let's see if they'll let us take the whole pack on a run around the inside of the palisade. That will really muddle my prince up.
That was a great idea. Just how to get the daft dog boy to convey that idea to the captain without making him suspicious that dog boy might be smarter than he seemed. Well, I'll think about this while taking the dogs on a run around the compound. The dogs were more than ready for a run. In fact, he got longing snatches of chasing the pigs and the delicious reward afterward that let him know they'd have been more than willing to go on another hunt if they'd been allowed. They were disappointed when he let them into the courtyard, and there were no hunters waiting, but they got over their disappointment when he directed them to go into a full run following Laurel. The captain was still giving instructions to his men when the hounds took off, and he gave them a cursory glance, then went back to his men. Then stopped. And as his men stared, puzzled that he had broken off his harangue, he watched the dogs circle the compound under Laurel's leadership. Finally, he looked for Perry and found him.
Dog boy!
He shouted, and waved to Perry to indicate he should come. Perry obediently trotted over. The captain looked around, searching, Perry suspected, for something to make a map of the city with. Finally, he looked at his men and ordered them to remain, and he pulled Perry over to the kennel. He got a half-burned stick from the fire under the copper and drew a circle on the wall with it.
Here,
he said, stamping his foot to indicate that this was where they were. Just to emphasize that, he did some little stick figures that might have been dogs just inside the circle and looked at Perry with no real hope. Perry gave the captain his best thinking face. Finally, he repeated,
here,
and stamped his foot, then made a circling motion inside the circle on the wall.
Dogs, he said. Run!
And he waited with an expectant look on his face. The captain just lit up. He made a bigger circle around the smaller one, vaguely sketched a lot of squares to fill it, made a big, thick line where the gate to the compound was, then a bigger, thicker line where the gate to the city was, and sketched those same stick figures running just inside the palisade.
Dogs run?
The captain asked, making the same circling motion inside the palisade that he'd made inside the compound. Perry grinned and bobbed his head.
Dogs run, he confirmed.
The captain was too dignified a man to whoop, but he looked extraordinarily pleased.
Bring dogs, he ordered Perry, and he went back to his men.
Perry followed, pausing only for a moment outside the kennel to whistle shrilly and enforce that with the mental command to come to him.
Right,
the captain was saying as he ambled up, and the dogs came streaming to him to line up and sit down, panting.
Dog boy's beasts were on the edge of the palisade, and if there's anything that ain't a spook or a spirit out there, it'll likely be scared out of hiding. You'll be searching farther inside, looking for anything that gets flushed. That clear enough?
The men all assented in one voice that sounded relieved. Perry didn't blame them. He wouldn't have been looking forward to a house-to-house search out there in that echoing empty city.
All right then, move out!
The men turned and followed their officer. The captain looked for Perry, but he and the dogs were already falling in behind them. As they passed the compound gates, Laurel glanced up at Perry.
Should we head out on our own?
Better not, Perry advised. I'd rather they had no idea you know how to get to the front gates by yourself.
Good point.
The men were moving at a military trot. It wasn't hard to keep up with them. When they got within sight of the gates, their officer halted them and gestured to Perry.
Do you know what to do?
He asked anxiously. Perry nodded and pointed at the gates.
Go there. Dogs, run.
He indicated with a swirling gesture that they'd be going Diosil. The officer's brow cleared.
Right. Off you go, then.
As Perry and the pack trotted off, he shouted at his men,
All right, then. Right face. Keep within earshot of the hounds. Look for anything that gets flushed out. Start the search.
By that time, the pack had arrived at the gates, and Perry started them off at an easy lope, instructing them to bay as if they were hunting, with Laurel to lead them. He stood there for a long moment as the sounds of baying dwindled and died and looked around. As usual, no one was paying attention to him. He eyed one of the buildings nearest him.
I wonder if it's locked.
He ambled up to the front door, which was flush with the street, and tried it. The door swung open easily. He looked back at the guards at the gate, who still weren't paying any attention to him.
Well, all right then, he thought, and went in.
17. Roy was still chewing his cud and thinking when Mags decided enough time had passed that he could reasonably try to contact Arvel again.
Roya, he said tentatively.
I'm going to talk to the other human. Yes, go ahead. The master is still occupied with the city. Your foal is running the dog pack around the inside edge.
The Dahili made a sound in his throat that resembled a chuckle, and the sudden amusement in his thoughts suggested that was precisely what it was.
Clever little fellow. It's almost as if he knew that we would be doing such things and is giving the master something the master believes will flush out anything hidden.
Well, the master probably ordered his mercenaries to search the city, and their leader got the idea that it would be less work if the dogs helped,
Mags pointed out, then frowned.
That suggests we really ought to pursue this notion of giving the master something to occupy and frighten him. First, he sends men out to search the woods. Then he sends men out to search the city. Does that seem excessive to you?
Possibly, but I am not a human. Still, I have an idea or two. I'm still pondering them. Meanwhile, see what your humans at home want to do.
He got an instant response from Arvel when he made contact.
It's possible to burn out a gift, but the healer has to be touching the person he's affecting,
Arvel said immediately, without even exchanging any sort of greeting.
Obviously.
Yes, not practical. What else?
They want you and Perry to eliminate the master,
Arvel said unhappily.
The exact words were, at whatever cost. Mags,
You are going to tell them that if we try and fail, we'll be putting Valdemar in worse danger than it is now,
Mags interrupted him.
The master will then know about Harold's and companions, and when he breaks either Perry or me, he'll know everything about them.
Oh.
And he'll know about Kairi as well, so Ryu won't be safe either. Besides that, the master will know we know about him. He'll know we are not even considering negotiating with him, and he'll have all the advantages. He can sit in his city and wait for us to make a move, or he can sit at the back of his mercenary troops, lead them against Valdemar, and wait for Valdemar to give him more troops. And frankly, we don't see how Perry and I can succeed against him right now.
There was a very long moment of silence. Finally, Arvel replied,
I never thought of that.
I don't think they have yet either, Mags said. You relay that. I'll get more information from Perry tonight. Can you stay up long enough to get it from me after I speak with him? There was a dogged determination in Arvel's reply.
I'll do it if I have to hold my eyes open with my fingers, he promised. Talk to you then.
This time it was Arvel who broke the contact, probably to get back to the relay and pass on what Mags had just told him. Mags was just as glad. Contacting him while the Master was awake was risky, even with the Master preoccupied elsewhere. He opened his eyes to find Roya still reclining on the sand, still chewing his cud. Roya opened one eye and gave him a jaundiced look.
Go hunt mushrooms. Look for roots or herbs or check your fish traps. I am still thinking.
The first floor of the house was two big rooms. The first looked like any of the rooms at the big house. Wood floor and walls, a single fireplace in the middle of the back wall, a door next to it. There was no paint, only polished woodwork, all of that same odd silvery gray wood. The room smelled of nothing, not even dust, which seemed odd. Perry would have thought that there would at least be dust settled everywhere in here. And surely the mercenaries hadn't actually cleaned this place, had they? Well, perhaps they had. Perhaps when they first arrived, they had set up camp in the houses nearest the gate just to be safe. He went through the door and found himself in a kitchen. There was an oven and a fireplace built into the wall he had just passed through, obviously sharing the chimney with the fireplace in the other room. There were pantries at either end and a long counter under the tall, narrow windows, with three big stone sinks with drain pipes leading into the floor and a hand pump on one of them, which argued a very high level of sophistication, higher than Haven, in fact. There, only the homes of the wealthy had drains and sewers and their own indoor access to water. Here, it was a house right by the front gate, a house identical to every other house in the city, so far as he could tell at this point. But all he had seen so far was a very small part of the city, and that was all along the way that led to the compound, however twisting and indirect that path might seem. Maybe there were poorer, less sophisticated neighborhoods away from the main thoroughfare. There was a staircase leading up to the next floor along the left-hand pantry wall. It was the only way up to the second floor. And that was odd, too. In Haven, anyone living in a house this size would have servants, and you'd never have servants sharing the same stairs as the masters of the house. You would also never see the masters using a staircase in the kitchen. Yet, there was no sign that the single large room had been anything like a bedroom, which meant the bedroom, or rooms, had to be upstairs. Unless these people made public spaces out of their bedrooms. No, that wasn't possible. So either people here hadn't had servants, or they didn't care to waste space making two sets of access points to the upper stories when one would do. He spared a moment to check with Laurel.
Where are you? I'm exploring an empty house.
We aren't even a quarter way around, the Kyrie reported. Do all the exploring you want.
Satisfied, he headed for the staircase. The second floor also had fireplaces, four of them. This time situated in the corners of the four rooms that the second floor was divided into, with their chimneys slanted to join the main one from the first floor. Each room led into the next. There were no hallways, so if these were bedrooms, it meant that people had to traipse through other people's rooms to get to their own. Then again, there were parts of the palace like that. The masters would sleep in the farthest rooms, and the ones you went through to get to the bedrooms were sitting rooms and solars. And certainly the rooms he shared with his family there were just as odd. There was no furniture, and no sign of what these rooms had been used for, but once again, there was a single staircase leading up to the third floor at the far end of the building. He climbed it to find himself on a floor identical to the one below it. It included a staircase leading to what must be the attic with those peculiar eye-like windows in the slate roof. Once again, he climbed the stairs. There were no fireplaces here, and no dividing walls, just the slanted roof and the chimney coming up through the floor and into the ceiling. And there was no dust here, either. The attic was entirely empty.
and it might not have been used for storage either. It might have been where the servants all slept, all the beds lined up like so many sleeping spaces in an inn, since many people felt that servants didn't need privacy of any sort. But he did discover one thing. The heavy parchment-like substance that had once kept the wind and cold out of this room was torn out of several of the windows. Only the fact that the slate roof overhung them so deeply had kept weather out as well. There were some faint signs of bird droppings on the sills, but evidently even birds had been discouraged from nesting here. By what, though? That was the real question. Was it just that the single big room intimidated them? That didn't make any sense. He'd seen birds nest in haylofts, in attics like this, all the time. He double-checked the ceiling, and there were plenty of places among the rafters where birds could have tucked nests. Could it just be that there were so many places to nest here that the birds just hadn't gotten to this house? That didn't make sense either. This house was the closest to the forest on this side of the city, and there was a food source of sorts in the guards, who certainly must drop the occasional crumb or piece of meat.
I should ask the ravens to look into one of these houses and tell me if they feel something wrong.
The ravens had much keener senses for some things than a human did.
Or maybe these houses actually are haunted.
Laurel had said not, but, well, how did he know for certain? He shook his head, mentally chiding himself. This was getting him nowhere, and it certainly wasn't helping in figuring out how to handle the master.
I should really be concentrating on finding out what his weakness is, besides being seriously insane, that is.
Then again, insanity by itself wasn't always a weakness. It could be a strength. He trotted down the stairs and took a second look around the rooms on the third and second floors, trying to spot if there were marks on the floor or the walls that might show where furniture had been. But there was nothing. This house might as well have been brand new, with no one ever living here at all. Since Laurel and the pack weren't back yet, he took the time to check three other houses along this street, though he didn't go farther than the second floors. All were identical to the first in every way. To be honest, it was beginning to make him feel a bit spooked. What kind of people could possibly have lived here? Had it all been one gigantic semi-communal enterprise with all goods held in common, as a few settlements on the southern border did things? Was that why every building was the same, so no one could boast of having more or suffer from having less than anyone else did? And where had they gone? Why had they stripped out every possession before they left? To be honest, he was more disturbed by these mysterious, long-vanished people than he was by the master. The master was just a powerfully gifted lunatic with a taste for human flesh. Not being able to categorize these people bothered him at a fundamental level. But he didn't get too much more time to dwell on it all. As he came out of the fourth house he'd explored, he heard the dogs baying in the near distance, so he made his way back to the gate to wait for them.
"Find what you were looking for in there, dog boy?"
one of the guards at the gate asked. Perry stuck his finger in his mouth and chewed on it for a moment. Then he shook his head.
"Well, that'd be because there's nothing in there to see, eh?"
the second guard said in a slightly more kindly tone of voice.
"Dunno where the master gets his gold, but it ain't from these empty houses."
Fortunately, the arrival of the pack, now tired enough that they were moving at a lope rather than a run, put an end to any need to interact with the guards. Perry gathered the pack around himself and waited for the arrival of the men that he'd come with. Meanwhile, one of the guards worked a pump to fill a water trough that was right at the gate. Perry had seen it, but he thought it was non-functional. When it became apparent that it worked, he wove his way through the dogs to take over the job so they could drink. By the time they had their fill, the men had finally returned, and it was their turn at the pump. They drank from their hands and put their heads under the spout while he worked away at it.
"Did you turn up anything?"
one of the gate guards asked.
"Not a damn thing," the officer replied. "Nothing but echoes, and them dogs did a damn fine job for us. If they had been even a sparrow, they'd have routed it out."
The men all exchanged weary looks, as if they would have liked to say something, but knew they dared not. Perry just kept his upper mind full of the dogs. If the master was bothering to look at him, he'd be bored stiff. Finally, the officer mustered his men, and they all headed back to the compound, with Perry and the pack bringing up the rear. The dogs were thinking of food and sleep in that order. They'd gotten a good run today, and it would be quiet tonight in the kennel. His dinner and the dogs were waiting when they got back to the compound. Perry sent two of the helpers back to wherever they stayed when they weren't helping him, and kept the other two to speed up the feeding. The dogs ate quickly and were obviously thinking with longing of their soft beds as they ate. They didn't even try to steal choice bits from each other. As he had hoped, by the time the sun started to set, they were down and sleeping. He thought about trying to contact the ravens, but thought better of it. Having found nothing in the city, the master might be in a foul mood and looking for something or someone to take his ire out on. Better not draw attention to himself. He and Laurel took a last walk around the compound and visited the privies, and saw that the men were all evidently thinking the same thing. There were no gatherings in the tack rooms. They were getting their food from the cook and taking it to their allotted spaces to eat, then busying themselves with a chore or going straight to sleep. They even avoided looking at each other. In fact, he could only think of one name for the mood that seemed to be on them. Dread. But however annoyed the master was, he didn't turn his attention to the men tonight. The compound remained silent, with nothing but the occasional neigh or whicker of a horse to interrupt the silence as Perry walked back to the kennel with Laurel faithfully at his side. Following the example of the men, he settled down in his own bed with Laurel serving as a pillow, keeping his upper mind still full of dogs with occasional glimpses of ravens. He wondered what his father had learned. He hoped all the Dyheili had gotten out of range of the hunting mercenaries. He wondered what it was that the master had detected, or thought he had detected. And most of all, he dreaded to hear what the king and his council had decided, because he didn't think there was any chance at all that he and his father could handle the master alone, much less the master guarded by all his mercenaries, and he wasn't at all sure what his father would do given those orders.
How bad would it be if I asked Roya to knock him unconscious and keep him pinned down until Laurel and I can escape on our own and drag him home?
At least he was pretty sure that Dallin would be on his side. He must have dozed a little, waiting in the darkness, but he woke up immediately at the touch of his father's mind on his, the faint scent of the pine needles of his bed in his nose. And he woke up with the knowledge that he had to make the most of his time, in case the master woke up and began nosing about. Before Mags could say anything, he unloaded every single detail that he and Laurel had learned, even the things he had seen in his fruitless exploration of the empty buildings. When he finished, there was silence. But not the silence of absence, because he knew his father was still there. It was more like the silence of someone who was fitting a lot of information into what he already knew. He knew that was what it was. He wanted to scream with impatience, but he restrained himself. It wouldn't do any good, and might somehow alert the master. Finally, his father spoke.
"I'm going to tell you something, but don't overreact to it, Perry. I'm not going to follow orders I was given by the king, because the odds of failure are high, and the consequences of failure are even higher. The fact is, we've been ordered to eliminate the master regardless of cost, and I'm not sure what the consequences are going to be of disobeying those orders. I've registered my objections, and I'm waiting now to see what the council says. I think they will agree with me, but I'm not certain."
Perry had been tense, waiting for just that, and now he relaxed.
"I wouldn't allow it anyway," he heard Roya say, faintly, in the same part of his head that he heard animal mind speech in.
Now, this was interesting. When his father spoke using mind speech that was so powerful that he could make even people who had no gifts at all hear him, it felt as though the thoughts were his own, except they were somehow in his father's voice, coming from somewhere near the top of his head. When he mind spoke with intelligent animals like Laurel and Roya, the words came in other, very distinct voices, did not feel as if they were his own, and came from somewhere right between his ears. He'd had the feeling for some time now that Mags could not hear what Roya and Laurel were saying when they mind spoke this way, and this pretty much confirmed his guess. Evidently, Roya did not want Mags to know this particular fact, so he replied the same way. "Why not?"
"Nothing to gain. Everything to lose," came the terse response. "If you get taken, This master will find out about my herd.
Well, that's good, he said where his father could hear him. It means I won't have to figure out a way to escape on my own, so I can hit you in the head, tie you to Dullin, and get you out of here.
He sensed his father actually chuckling at that. We are trying to think of a way to make the master believe there is something besides us out here. I thought of trying to invoke the Vrondi to watch him, but there's no telling if the Heartstone under the palace will talk to the king, and I don't know any real magic except the truth spell. He blinked up at the ceiling.
Well, you can get in here at any time, I think. Laurel can get you in under the palisade. You can get over the fence around the compound, drop me a rope, and the two of us and Laurel can get out the same way you came in. But that will tell the master that you're here.
So we save that for an emergency. If you think you are in danger, we'll act and then retreat back to the Valdemar border.
Then something occurred to him. Can Roya find some Hawk Brothers? I would think they'd have something to say about this master.
There was a pause. He says he has already sent his son with half of the herd to do so.
Then I think maybe we ought to wait until we know whether or not they are going to come down here and do something about him.
He didn't know a lot about the Teledras, only what was written in some of the histories about Harald Vanyell, but they certainly seemed formidable enough, and the master probably threatened them as much as he did Valdemar. So maybe Roya could get some Hawk Brothers to intervene, even though this was no longer their territory.
You and Roya should tell them about the city, too, if you can get their attention. They might be willing to come down to look at it as well as deal with the master.
You're sure you are in no immediate danger?
He considered this.
He felt that as long as the master thought he was daft, he was safe.
I'm probably still safer than you. The captain seems to like me. The men aren't bullying me because of the dogs, and the master thinks I'm daft and not worth bothering about.
All right, then. Let me know the moment that changes. Send a raven if you have to. I will contact you again tomorrow.
And then there was the absence that meant his father was gone. All right, now we can talk, Roya said, still faint and far but audible. I will knock your father out if he changes his mind and tries to attack the master alone, if that's what you want.
It is what I want. Please,
he sensed Roya chuckling.
I have Dallin's assent. Well, I understand your king's reasoning, that it is better for a few to fall for the good of the herd. I sense that the master knows more of Valdemar than you think he does. And if he got his hands on your father, Dullin, or both, he would learn still more. Meanwhile, I have something I wish you to do. The next time you and the pack go off to hunt, I want you to go here.
Roya planted a very clear path in his head of how to get from the gate to where here was.
There is a firebird and its mate and young there. If you can speak to them and they will listen to you, we will have a distraction for the master. Something he is not expecting.
Perry's eyes widened.
He knew exactly what Roya meant.
A firebird could literally start fires, and if they wanted a distraction, Perry could show the firebird where to start carefully situated fires. In fact, working with the ravens, the lot of them could create campfires out in the forest that would be spotted from the city. Fires that would have no one around them when mercenaries came running to attack whatever had built them. That would give the impression that the city was being watched by something the master could not detect.
Why haven't you gone? He asked.
Because it is too near the city and the master for my comfort. I do not want him to discover there are any of my kind here either, particularly if he does not already know about us.
They'll run out of meat again soon enough. Will the birds stay near the nesting site for a while?
They should. There is a huge thicket of a sort of berry they like, and lots of insects. I don't think they will leave for at least 2 fortnights.
He felt a rush of elation, because it wouldn't be more than a day or two before he was sent out to hunt again.
That's plenty of time. I'll tell you how it goes. You're brilliant, Roya.
I know. Sleep well, clever foal.
Mags broke off his conversation with his son to contact Arvel. He had a headache beginning between his eyebrows, and he was sure that Arvel, who was not in the least used to doing this much mind-speaking, was feeling even worse.
He was right. He could tell just from the tenor of Arvel's thoughts that the man was in pain. Mags, the Heartstone, whatever that is, won't talk to the king without you there.
And they sure didn't like it when I told them what you told me, about it being too risky to take on the Master with just the four of you, but they agreed that you're right. So they're going to try and make a better plan.
He felt the tension in his chest and neck ebb a little.
That's good. All right, this is what Perry learned. You can pass it on to them, and then that will be all for tonight. And for most of tomorrow, I think.
He quickly passed everything on to Arvel and to Pellis, knowing that the companion would remember what Arvel did not.
You might ask the Chronicler to see if he can find any references to a city like that. It's like nothing I've ever heard of. Perry is right. The composition of the buildings he was in makes no sense, unless they're meant to house units of a communal society, and I've never heard of a communal society that held together long enough to construct a city like that.
He felt Arvel's sigh.
I don't understand half of what you just said, but I'll let them know, the old man said wearily. Is that all?
That's all. You're a lifesaver, Arvel. Get some rest as soon as you can.
The assent was wordless rather than concrete thoughts, and they both broke the connection at the same time.
I know of a society that is communal that would hold together long enough to build a city, Roya said suddenly. In fact, Hertasi could and would build anything they choose to. But those buildings were made for humans. I've never known Hertasi to serve anything other than Taladras, and Taladras have never lived in cities like that. They only live in vales with a heartstone. Not only that, but I cannot imagine how those buildings would be in such good shape after being clearly abandoned, unless there was magic involved in the creation and preservation of them.
Why would anyone waste magic on making buildings? He wondered aloud.
But thinking of real magic got his mind going in an entirely different direction. Suddenly, a very horrible thought occurred to Mags.
What if the Master is not merely the most powerful mind speaker I've ever seen? He asked, looking across his little fire into Roya's dark eyes. What if he's also a magician? What if the magic is what's making his mind speech so strong?
Roya's chin stopped working and he stared back at Mags.
You've seen this before, haven't you? Magic working with mind gifts, I mean.
He nodded. When I was just a trainee. And if I were anywhere near where I could get a fast messenger to my cousin, I would ask him for advice. But I've seen exactly that, and I wonder if this is the secret to his power. It's entirely possible that he is using blood magic to increase his mind magic powers.
That might explain why he is eating human flesh, Roya observed.
It does? But
he may not be formally trained. He may be blundering his way. If he honestly does not know, it is merely the act of slaying someone that allows a mage to siphon off their magic power and thinks he must actually consume their flesh to gain the power, that would explain his cannibalism.
Roya went back to chewing his cud. Mags shuddered. Just when he thought he had seen the depths to which a human could go, someone else came along and proved he hadn't.
Is there any way we can use this against him? If he is merely blundering his way around using magic.
I suggest that the less we have to do with him directly, the better. I am working on a way to distract him from you, me, and the herd for the moment. And quite frankly, he's insane. I am not even going to attempt to predict most of his behavior.
Oh, gods.
Mags pinched the bridge of his nose between his thumb and forefinger.
Well, you're never going to be able to sleep tonight.
Roya cocked his head to the side.
Oh, well, if that is all you are worried about at the moment.
And it was not until morning that he awoke. Perry startled up out of sleep with an inarticulate exclamation as Laurel shoved a cold nose into his ear. But a moment later, all the dogs began barking as the captain shoved the door to the kennel open. Perry hushed them as the captain peered inside, his figure silhouetted against the early morning sky.
Dog boy,
he said.
Are you awake?
As if anyone could have slept through all the dogs going off like that.
Dog boy,
Perry affirmed.
Can you and the dogs hunt today?
The captain asked.
Yes,
Perry replied shortly, and he held back his glee.
Can you and the dogs hunt men?
The captain asked, which took him aback for a moment. But he quickly recovered, pulling himself up out of his pine needle bed and walked over to the door.
Got smell?
he asked matter-of-factly, crossing his fingers and hoping that question didn't betray too much intelligence.
Not one of our men, the captain amended.
He scratched his head, dislodged a pine needle, pulled it out of his hair, and chewed on it for a long while.
Long hunt, he said.